Welcome to Ladies with Gumption. This is episode number 162, Running the Gauntlet. We have Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I'm here with...
May.
And Tatiana.
And you can connect with us on Twitter at DCTV Gumption. We had quite a bit of interaction last weekend when we posted, because we posted some of the clips from the Instagram live hangout with Ozzy, Candace, Javicia, and Anna. So if you are new from that, thank you and welcome. Stick around. We do a lot of other stuff. You can find our podcast on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, which is iTunes, basically, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, iHeartRadio, and on Patreon, where if you do subscribe to our Patreon for only $10 a month, you can listen to additional things. You get these episodes 24 hours in advance, but you also get other cool stuff, including the Marvelverse, so MCUverse, HBO Max, so if you are a fan of Doom Patrol, possibly Titans, because sometimes we are not fans of Titans.
Someday.
Someday, yeah. But, you know, Titans, HBO premium content, Netflix series. I think Netflix had their big fall preview event thing, and you know,
the Ta-Dum event.
Ta-Dum. I was like, what is Ta-Dum? Like, what is? Oh, okay. I now that I was like Ta-Dum, I was like, oh, okay. It is the sound that Netflix makes when you turn it on. I get it. Just now, but like for example, on there we got previews for our trailer for The Witcher, which is coming out season 2. And we also got a trailer for Sandman, which is going to be interesting. And that's coming out as well. So also, I am a fan of Cowboy Bebop. And, you know, that's coming to Netflix as well. So that's another interesting thing. So there's a lot of different things that we do on Patreon that we do not release to our regular site. So if you like any of that, then you can sign up. Patreon.com/DCTVGumption. In the news, speaking of that Instagram live, because of that, a lot of Javicia fans decided that they wanted to get together and show her love. So they did a We Love Javicia trend that was on last Sunday. They got it to trend. And not only did they get it to trend, they got the attention of Batwoman's Writers Room. So the Batwoman's Writers Room also Aww. Participated in the trend. They retweeted. They said, we love our Batwoman. Natalie Abrams, who was up in Vancouver recently, because I guess she wrote the episode, whatever episode they're filming on right now, she chimed in on the trend. Both she and Cameron sent Javicia the trend. So Javicia got to see the trend, and she got to see all of your love. So very big kudos to the fans that put that together and got it to trend and just showed her so much love on Twitter. Yay, she saw it. And you know that it's something that's going to remind her on dark days that, you know, people do out there love her. And I think, again, like, the fact that the writer's room is just like, yes, we love Javicia, again, shows you that, you know.
Like, validation.
They are standing right. 10 toes down in their decision to keep her, and especially just because of, like, all this stuff that, you know, we talked about last week with Wallace. It's good to see, like, the writers are like,
have her back.
Yeah, Javicia is our Batwoman, which is, you know, something that you want to happen for, especially for Black actresses in their show. Did you guys have any feelings on that, or in particular, or comments to add?
Feelings of warmth and joy. It's nice when fandoms come together. I'm glad that they were able to do that for her. I'm glad that she saw it. I feel like Batwoman gets so much shit thrown at it, like, regardless, from all sides, you know? It's almost like, I guess it feels like a sigh of relief, I guess, right? A breath of fresh air when you can all come together. And hopefully, I would think, aside from people who are legitimately just awful and just should not be part of the fandom, there isn't going to be that kind of division in the fandom that there might be in, you know, The Flash or Supergirl, because people have just like, I just hate all these ships, and that's what my problem is, you know? Batwoman doesn't really have that. So I guess it's nice that they can actually care about the characters and come together for the actors that are playing those characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was definitely nice to see the love after, you know, Wallace got kind of weird in the comments last week. So it was,
and it's also nice that she's just a guest star. So she can't be doing that on or behind the screen anymore.
and it is impressive too, because I didn't see even the hashtag. I just saw people using "We Love Javicia" on top of
like quote tweets. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, what's this trend? And I click and I'm like, oh, that's nice. So it's just, like Tati said, you know, a feeling of warmth that it's been a while since I think any DC TV show trended outside of like the live airings and stuff. And it was just nice to see that it was a supportive thing. Oh, yeah.
There was a trend for Ozzy for her. Yeah, for the Guardians.
Yeah. But yeah, it is nice to see just people being really, really supportive of her. And, you know, this is our Batwoman and she's not going anywhere. So,
yeah. And then I guess like the only thing I would say again is that, you know, that extra oomph or like validation from like the writer's room participating in the thing. Sure. I think that also goes to what you're saying, Tati, about like you don't really get a lot of loud antis because when you have like the powers that be that are like backing up their star and putting their foot down and putting it out there. Instead, like putting a gate around, like we do not tolerate this kind of behavior. So
yeah, that is good. Exactly.
Anywho, so that's what happened around the world.
That's what you missed on Glee. Exactly.
did either of y'all see the Sandman trailer?
Yes. No. Well, you mean it was Charles Dance like being like, "We have to catch them all, the Pokemon of desire."
Yes.
I did see it. I have to admit, like, I don't know Sandman like that. Mm. I have friends who have been obsessed with Sandman literally the entire time that I've known them. So, for decades. And yet I still have not read Sandman because I'm terrible. But I'm going to do it now because I cannot go in blind, clearly. I watched that trailer and I was like,
I don't know.
I don't know what's happening.
I've not seen it. And I don't know anything beyond the castings and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I've lately started loving going in blind because I have zero expectations. So I'm like, just surprise me. I don't know what's happening here. Just make me happy.
You could be the control. I'll be the, I did my research and you could be the, I'm just flying by the seat of my pants. I like it. We can come back and discuss.
Yes.
Watch this space.
We'll bring balance, you know.
Exactly.
Alrighty. Well, now moving on to the body of our episode, we talk about Stargirl and Supergirl, so Superstar. We will give our joy, what brought us joy, what did not bring us joy, feedback, and we will crown a Lady's Consumption of the Week. Tati is our host, and she is going to take it away with Side A, which I have not named.
Well, we're going to name it the very effective name of Summer School Chapter 8.
Because that was
the name of the episode. Actually, maybe we should call it like...
I Know What You Did This Summer.
I Know What You Did This Summer.
Ooh.
I like it. I Know You Did This Summer. All right.
Appropriate with the horror theme.
Exactly. And the fact that it's summer. There you go. Oh my God. Wow. Yolanda returns the Wildcat gear to Courtney, who is still struggling to accept her best friend's tragic decision. Rick receives a visit from his teacher, who apologizes for being an asshole and gives information about applying to college. But then his grumpy Uncle Matt ousts her out of the house. Rick goes to the forest and vents to his bestie Grundy, who expresses sympathy because now he has been tamed. Eclipso causes Beth to hallucinate that her parents blame her for their divorce and casts doubt about her inclusion in the JSA by being super racist. However, Beth's self-confidence enables her to return to reality because Beth loves herself. And apparently, nobody else does. So thank you for that, Beth. Dr. Midnight tells Beth that he's being hunted. McNighter tells Beth that he's being hunted and teaches her how to use the goggles in order to distinguish reality from fiction. Eclipso also manipulates Rick into thinking that Grundy killed a little girl. So Rick mistakenly attacks his uncle and destroys the hourglass amulet. Subsequently, he is arrested. I don't know why, because that was a totally deserved beating, but that's okay. And the real Grundy solemnly watches his bestie from afar.
Solomon Grundy
solemnly watches. Yes. Solomon Grundy solemnly watches. Later, as they comfort each other, Barbara and Mike's house is encased in ice. It is also Pat and Courtney's house, but they're not there. So we're going to say Barbara and Mike's house. All right. Directed by Andy Armaganian and written by Steve Harper. What brought joy?
Many things. Stargirl, again, I think knocks out of the park in terms of showing us how dark and devastating Eclipso can be, like how he can worm his way into people's minds and affect them in ways by, you know, touching upon their insecurities and making them see things. And I did like the fact that it sort of focused both on Beth and Rick in the same episode, even though we didn't really get anything between them per se. But after so long, we get Beth talking to her parents in a way that felt really meaningful and also really nice, in the sense that we went, like, I went from like, oh my God, Beth's parents are so mean, to, oh, they do want to be there for her, but they're always just like caught up in everything that they have going on. So that was really nice. And I felt like it gave Beth some type of closure, in the sense that she didn't really feel like she was alone, even though, you know, she didn't have like the support of her friends this episode, but at least she had her parents there with her. And speaking of all of that, I really think that it was interesting to see how Eclipso wormed his way into Beth's mind with regards to like not being a legacy kid, not being necessarily chosen like the other ones were, in a way, kind of digging into those feelings, because I don't really think that she's ever verbalized them. And, you know, the whole hiding behind her smile or whatever, it was really creepy and also really good and well done, in the sense that like you get what's going on in Beth's mind, or at least like maybe she's thought about these things at some point, but at the end of the day, she also believes in her abilities. So I like the fact that she did rise up against him and realize that what he was telling her was a lie, and that she does fit, and she chose herself to be Dr. Midnight because she believes in her abilities, you know, and all of these things about herself. Like, that was really, really good, a powerful moment. And then like with Rick's stuff, I really like the fact that we got to see, because for a moment I forgot that, you know, his uncle existed, to be honest. And then they sort of brought him back into the story to showcase like how different the two were, and also how much Rick kind of sees the good in people, whereas his uncle doesn't. And, you know, like the whole story about the dog taking him away, and then he's like a different type of dog because he was cared about. That was really sweet, in his kind of comparing his relationship with Grundy, and now he sees Grundy in a different light because Grundy's having someone who takes care of him and, you know, feeds him and all that stuff. So it was like a nice evolution of their relationship, but also season's really dark. And then just seeing like who he ended up beating up was his uncle was just really devastating, but I think really good drama at the same time. Like, it hurt me, but also I'm like, yes, this moves the story forward, because it's like slowly withering away at the Justice Society. And it's like, you first Yolanda, now Rick's no longer our knight. So it's just slowly digging into all of that, and it's just like really, really effective. And I even think like Courtney, because she couldn't speak to Yolanda in this episode, her talking to her cosmic staff was really nice, because it's like she was also talking to Yolanda, like, you're also my friend, it's not just I need you for this team or whatever, you're also, you know, there for me. And I thought that was really, really sweet. So I think that the season has been doing really well in gradually building up all of these separate storylines and, you know, touching upon like the individual arcs of the characters and kind of digging into their psychology really, really well.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, for as dark as this season is, which we can get into on the other side, it is written for the most part really, really well. And the way that they're exploring, especially like Eclipso's hold on each of the JSA members, I still think like Yolanda's episode last week was like the best written episode of the season. This one, I think, does a good job of continuing on building it was kind of like, what's real or what's not real. We didn't even know in last week's episode. In this week's episode, we get some more clarity on what exactly is Eclipso, even though it's, we start out still not knowing what's going on. Like Beth, when her parents came in, I'm like, oh my God, they're together. Oh my God, they brought her food. They want to talk. Like, what is this? We're going to start to get like, you know, some movement there. And then all the stuff that came out of their mouth, just like, I should have known better. I should have known when they brought in food that something was off. So, you know, with Beth, I really loved what she was wearing. She looks so cute, by the way, like her little outfit. But I just loved her standing up to Eclipso, even when he was being like super racist and super on the nose about the race. Like at one point, I was like, okay, there's all the isms. I get it. Beth gets it. We all get it. Can we just stop, stop honing in on it? But I like that she, when he was like, you know, trying to get her to be scared of him, she was like, if I'm so scared, then why are you hiding? Which I thought was brilliant line. And then again, which got him to come out. And then again, it's just like sunshine defeats darkness all the time. And she's just like a ball of sunshine. So I was really, really proud of her because I feel like that the way that he was hitting in on her. And I think like what you're saying, May, that, you know, maybe it's something that she hadn't really vocalized. But we think about season one. It was kind of that way in that, you know, the other JSA members didn't really want her in the group or didn't really accept her being in the group. And, you know, Courtney thought she was a legacy. Rick was a legacy. You know, Courtney chose Yolanda. But Beth found the goggles and Beth kind of like ingratiated herself into the group and kind of just didn't leave. And so with him, with Eclipse, like hitting in and all this kind of stuff and that the fact that no one chose her and all those kind of things, based on our experience of what happened with Yolanda and what is happening with Rick, I'm like, you know, will he get to her? Like, will, you know, all the JSA are dropping like flies at this point. So it was really refreshing and very proud moment where she was like, no, I am strong. I choose me. I like me, you know, and it affected him and he could not defeat her. Like, this is this big, bad, you know, incarnation of evil, and Beth defeated evil. 1-0 Beth. So, you know, and the fact that she officially became the new Dr. Midnight. I also like that Chuck was there. They had like an actual conversation. Like, even though he's still like, who are you? The fact that he was like talking her through it, and now she's kind of aware that this is the real Dr. McNider, and they're kind of like talking through everything. And he, at the end, he tells her like he was there for all of it. He heard everything that she was going through and that he was proud of her. So at the time, whenever they get to save him and, you know, Beth and Charles McNider get to meet in person, I feel like that'd be like a nice passing of the torch because, you know, he chose her, essentially. He will have chosen her by the end of this. So I'm really, really proud of Beth. Rick's story, I thought, was it's kind of funny because their first in season one, their first focus episodes were combined. And my dog is, you know, that's the noise. He's playing with a toy. So the first episode in season one, their stories were together. And it's kind of this season two, their stories are still together. So that's the only hour night crumb that you get in this episode. But I like that Rick's teacher came to apologize, first of all, because I feel like you don't really see that a lot in media or in life of adults being wrong and then apologizing to the kid for being wrong. And then the fact that she went even beyond that to be like, I would like to help you get out of this situation. Because she drove all the way out to the middle of nowhere. Like, have you ever seen like Courage the Cowardly Dog and how he lives out in the middle of nowhere? This is like Rick in the middle of just nowhere at all. I don't know why he still lives with his uncle, but the fact that she would go all the way out there, you know, believe in him when no one really believes in him. I felt just really emotional for him when his uncle chased her off and he's kind of like releases into the forest all of his like feelings. I thought it was really great. It's not necessarily like a joy, but it's really good writing in the sense that, you know, the girl thinking that, you know, that she wound up being an illusion, and that the Grundy that Rick beats up is actually his uncle, I think is a great twist and reveal. Because I was like, you know, I thought it was real Grundy. And so when, you know, Courtney and Pat kind of break the illusion, that's really powerful. As you see, again, like how powerful like Eclipse can be. I agree with you about the story about the dog. I think like Rick is just, he has like a very sweet heart. You know, I think in season one, he was very ragey all the time. And now in season two, we're getting to see more of a softer side, and that he is just kind of like a really good kid, just has like a lot of really bad luck with life. So it's just, you know, him being arrested for something that he didn't realize he was doing is also kind of very sad. And the fact that he getting this far caused him to destroy the only memento that he has of his father was also really sad, that connected him to his dad. So all of that is just, you know, very like emotional storylines. Courtney doing her best. She's the other sunshine kid on the team. And I like that she named Cosmo the staff, and you know, that she's still trying. Like she's not giving up. Like, you know, even though Yolanda doesn't want to be a part of it anymore, she's not really, you know, the first thing she wants to do when she gets up is to go out there and try again with her. So I think, like, you know, it just shows again like Courtney's kind of leadership as well. So, you know, where the two Stormcloud kids, Yolanda and Rick, are falling apart, at least we have our sunshine kids with Courtney and Beth there to kind of hold the fort and eventually, hopefully, bring the team back together.
I love the calling them sunshine kids versus Stormcloud kids. I think that is very beautiful. And I also love the juxtaposition of how, you know, each quote unquote side is dealing with what they're going through. Plus, I thought that, like you said, the Beth and Rick stories really dovetailed naturally out of Yolanda's, right? We got the scene set last week, though I agree that last week's was just like a top-notch episode. This one was still a really strong follow-up to that, and sort of like gets the ball, or just, you know, like the last one got the ball rolling, and now the ball is just like tumbling down the mountainside or whatever, of what destruction Eclipso can wreak havoc. Yeah, you can wreak havoc. So especially I loved that there were like real world consequences for the Rick storyline, right? It wasn't just like an illusion. He didn't just beat up like nothing and then it's like, oh my god, my hand is bloody because I've been beating this rock, right? Mm-hmm. He actually beats up his uncle. It's like horrifying for the others to see, and then he's actually arrested, and now there's like they're even in more trouble, right? Not only is he maybe like out of the team effectively, but it's also like, we have to get Rick out of jail now, right?
It is so sad because he, like, in the beginning of the episode, he had dreams of college. It was right, yeah,
exactly,
there. Now.
Exactly. So now you're like, who knows what they're going to, where that's going to go, right? Mm-hmm. And to have that teacher have just been, I mean, the one good thing about it, I guess, is, like, the teacher got to see, first off, you know, believed him or realized that she had been wrong, apologized. That was really nice. Like you said, I was also moved by it and for him. And then she does see, I feel like she sees what the uncle is like, right? So right. She like knows like, oh, this is like the home environment that he's in. I see more now. I understand more now. I don't know. Then she'll be like, well, I feel like he should have beaten him up because he was very rude to me that morning. Probably not. But still, hopefully there is going to be some like room for, you know, leeway at somewhere. I guess you can't really be like, well, I was tripping on mushrooms. I definitely thought that he was a monster. Probably not going to work out for him, but hopefully there will be some.
I mean, I thought it was like going to be like the real Granny, because that's still kind of devastating.
Yeah, that would have been really
the
sad.
The fact that Granny didn't even do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That would have been really sad.
That also would have broke him. So
like, I feel much better that it was the uncle because the uncle deserves it. But I feel like that's worse in terms of what's going to happen now, right? We're not going to be like, wow, we're arresting you for beating up Solomon Grundy. Probably not. Anyway. I did think that the episode was appropriately, like, creepy. Like, it did feel Halloween-esque, even though, like, obviously this wouldn't be the Halloween episode. We have more. Exactly. Why was it? That's the episode. It's not really a like joy, but maybe, why was it 4th of July?
Maybe that's like the creepy part, because like when the fireworks start going off, I'm like,
July. True. This is supposed to be a different kind of holiday. Like,
they made Happy 4th sound like very ominous.
There you go. But anyway, I had like a really like, I liked that Beth's story was like a haunted house story kind of thing. And Rick's was like a monster movie, right? Like Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
So that was really cool. Also, I love how the first episode, and by first episode, I mean Yolanda's episode, they did not really reveal whether it was a hallucination or not. So you're like on edge now. And then this episode sheds light on that, right? Now we know, Okay, they were hallucinations. Mm-hmm. But for a little bit there, they could have been real, right? For a little bit, they were like, oh my God, Beth's parents are literally the worst. And oh my God, Grundy's murdering people again. So, and also the like killing a little girl thing is literally from Frankenstein. Because it's like, oh, she was so pretty or whatever. And then I was like, oh, so anyway, I thought they were just doing Frankenstein. And then I was like, oh no, it's a hallucination. Okay, so anyway. Also, I loved the resolution to the Beth storyline in Eclipso. Like, I love that she was the one that was really able to face Eclipso head on and to be like, you know what? I reject what you are saying about me. Like, you're preying on my fears, but I also love myself. So you are just going to have to go and shit on someone else. And so, yeah, I did like that too, because like you said, we did see that they did not want to accept her at first, or they were like cautious about it. But because she was so confident in her, you know, like that, her desire, I guess, to do something and to help and to be there. Now she's like, they can't do without her. They can't just remove her from the team. So she did choose herself. And by choosing herself, she was chosen by all of them. So I did like that. I think that's just like a good message in and of itself. Also very true to Beth's character, but also, as has been said already, we see that it is something she has been struggling with. Like, there are insecurities, even though she is, you know, bubbly, like full of sunshine, like you think everything's all good. Like, we've already seen how she's struggling with her parents' divorce, but now you're seeing how she feels like maybe she could contribute, or like maybe they won't want her now, right? Like, they're gonna reject her or whoever. So choosing herself, she's able to push those fears back and turn things around on the Eclipso, which is great. Also, I just love how Rick was looking after Solomon Grundy in the first place, right? He's like, he doesn't want to be his uncle. He starts off, like, you see how much he wants to, like, be a different man, right? Mm-hmm. And choose a different path. And then at the end, it's like, oh my God, it's like I'm accidentally becoming the same man. So it's all very, very upsetting, very sad times. Also, I did love that with Midnighter's help, Beth is able to sort of, like, tell things apart. Like, now they have a weapon to, or not really a weapon. I guess it's more like a defensive
tool.
A tool to use against Eclipso, or to fight Eclipso back, which is nice. And thank you, best parents, for making an attempt. A for effort. when Grundy called Rick his friend, shed tear. I love it. And also Mike calling Barbara mom at the end was very, very sweet. So I love that there. I actually forgot that she wasn't his mom until he said it. And I was like, oh my God, that's why she's not his mom. So anyway, it was beautiful. And good job, guys. I'm looking forward to, how this is going to build to an even bigger climax and then get resolved somehow. Lots to look forward to. What did we not, what would we like to throw out? What did not sparkle?
The racism. I was like, oh my God, this little rat, like, saying these things to Beth. I hate this kid so much. He's so scary. While at the same time, I guess I don't even know what decade he comes from, but I did not like it. And I guess, like, story-wise, just it breaks my heart. Not necessarily a dislike, just a sadness that the team is breaking up in a way. You know, everyone's kind of just, I don't want to do this anymore because this is really terrifying, or they went through something really traumatic and they can't handle it. So it's just really sad. And also, like, when Starman showed up, also using the JSA for racism, did not like that.
No.
That was so profound. I was like, oh my God, all of you? Why horrific things. But also just seeing like Starman there reminds me of the fact that in like Starman, he's still alive and we don't know anything that's going on with him. So I was like, okay, when are we going to pick that up? Because I mean, I know that they're waiting until the flashback episode or whatever. I guess somehow all will be revealed, but I'm growing very impatient with that. So
shortlist.
Indeed.
I mean, I agree. There's not like a ton of things to dislike, you know, but like this, I was surprised. I guess I don't know what I was expecting for season two, but this is like surprisingly thematically dark. Like these are kids. This is supposed to be like a kids team up and they're just dealing with demons, like summer school, my ass. What is going on? Can they not just like, I don't know, you know, go to a beach or something, have some fun? It just feels like, you know, instead of like having like fun one-off villains or even like expanding, actually doing a junior ISA storyline and expanding that kind of thing, we get a racist demon terrorizing all my children. It's just like, oh. I was so mad watching because I was like doing the live feeds for it. And then when Bruce said something about it, either must have been, at first I was like, I know he just didn't say what I think he said when he was talking about how she didn't deserve it. When he's talking about, you stole these, didn't you? You people. I'm like, you people, you bitch, what? And then he's like, you're the wrong color. And I'm like, I put up the little Michael Jackson, like, fuck them kids, me, Michael Jordan. And I was like, wait, maybe I've gone too far. And I was going to go delete it, but then people started, like, retweeting and liking it. I was like, well, see? They agree. And I also feel like the racism was just kind of, like, I mean, it was, you know, well honed in on Beth, but it just felt like it came out of nowhere. Like, I do know, like, Blue Valley is a small-ass town. And it does seem like Beth and her family are the only Black family in the town. But, like, it just didn't, I don't know, that they didn't really hint at those. Like, we just kind of got it all at the tail end of the episode when her mom was talking about, you know, coming into Blue Valley and taking over for a white doctor that retired, that had been there for, like, years, and how that was difficult. So they kind of, like, hinted around it. But they were just, like, really sharp on the racism part, and I don't know, it was kind of clunky. It was effective in the sense that Eclipso is just an asshole, but in terms of being Stargirl's attempt at, like, I don't know, BLM type episode or whatever, there's some gaps, I think, that there were that could have like flowed that together a little bit better. Minor, but no one called Beth on the way to hunt Grundy. Like, Rick called Pat. Like, you know, we need to keep, no, I think like Pat and Courtney were talking. It's like, you know, we need to get Rick and Beth. And then Rick called and they all went to go. Rick was like, what about Beth? Like, someone please get Beth so she's not stuck in this house with this monster. And then obviously, like, Yolanda breaking up Courtney and giving back a wildcat suit was just like a shot through the heart. Because I love their friendship and I need them to be back on the same page. And, you know, another nitpick, but I didn't even know Rick was still living. Like, I thought we had moved on from the hateful uncle. Why does Rick live out in the middle of nowhere? Like, couldn't Pat just, like, adopt him so he can, like, or something? I don't know.
Like, emancipate yourself, Rick.
Right. I guess the bright side is he won't have to be living out there anymore. Uncle, beat him up. But, you know. Whatever.
Yeah, there was not much to dislike about this episode, but I definitely agree about the, like, random, like, blatant racism from Eclipso. Like, just because, not that I don't believe a character like Eclipso would be, like, sexist and racist and everything.
If he's just using that because he knows. Yeah,
exactly. So, like, I definitely can buy that, but I just feel like the show has just so very much obviously not touched on those, like, issues. Right. That suddenly it was like, and now for a very special episode of Stargirl. I was like, wait a second. I didn't know y'all even, I thought you didn't see color. But anyway, So in that sense, I thought it was like a little bit weird. But I do appreciate how they like resolved it or tried to tackle it within the episode, even if it felt a little clunky. Also, you know, like we already said, even though I think it was good narratively speaking, I'm not like mad that the episode did this. I just feel so bad for Rick that I'm like, wow, I suddenly care. So thank you. I guess it's good that you made me care, but I don't feel joy about the fact that I care. This is a joyless caring. Like I already said, why the hell was it 4th of July? That was so unnecessary. I know it's summer. I know it's the summer, and that's why. We're just still in the summer. But I was like, who's even, like, it's a 4th of July episode. It wasn't really, but still. I was just like, this should be Halloween. What's happening? Why isn't it Halloween? Because it's summer school. And why is it summer school? Because it's COVID, and we don't want to show people. Which is pretty much the only explanation for
why. Another I Know What You Did Last Summer parallel is that that movie did take place over the 4th of July weekend. So.
Oh, my God.
Maybe this is
on
purpose. God.
There you go. Parallels are everywhere. Definitely agree. Like, not just that it's sad that that Yolanda gives Courtney Mack the gear, you know, and our little family is breaking apart, but also just that we don't really get much of Yolanda in the aftermath. I understand because it's Beth and Rick's episode, but I was like, oh, I see how it is. Plus, Cameron still, I don't know what the hell he's even doing. We're like,
he didn't show up this episode.
In the episode. Well, you know what? The house icing at the end, was that you, Cameron? is that your appearance for the episode? And also just the fact that I just feel like season one gave me so much Pat goodness, and this season is just like not, you know, where's my Pat goodness? I want more. But I did love Courtney naming the staff Cosmo and also having named Stripesy. So we love that. Anyway, that's all. So it wasn't very much a dislike. I just made up some things. Mm-hmm. Do we have feedback?
We do. And I forgot to mention this in our news section, but for Patreon, this weekend we are recording Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and we are having a special guest on that knows more about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. than I do. And her name is Sonia. And she also sent us feedback for Stargirl. So she says, hey, ladies, I'm so excited for our podcast to rant and rave about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She says, even though y'all picked two of my least favorite episodes to watch.
Oh, no.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting debate, y'all. Anyways, on to Stargirl. This was an amazing episode. I read somewhere that Angelica, who plays Beth, got to help write a little bit for the episode. And I guess it's the same week. It's the same as last week's Supergirl episode where Ozzy wrote, and it was an amazing episode. Maybe DCTV should just let all the Black actresses write on their shows. It broke my heart that Yolanda gave the suit back and that Courtney is blaming herself for everything that went down. Nice that Rick's teacher apologized to him for thinking that he was cheating and that she was trying to show him college could be an option for him. Holy hell, is Uncle such a psycho like this? Your nephew's teacher... Oh, wait, hold on. Holy hell, his uncle is such a psycho. Like, this is your nephew's teacher. Why are you threatening her? You'll wind up in jail before you'll end up in college. I didn't even realize that that was foreshadowing until writing this feedback, but wow. Oh my God. And I just realized that now that you said it. It was sweet that Rick was ranting to Grundy and is all, you don't even understand what I'm saying. And then Grundy pats him on the back and gives him an apple. We know that Dr. Midnighter is something called a Shadowscape. I hope that that's where Cindy and the Shade are so they can save them all. Poor Beth, the entire scene with her parents telling her that she's the reason they are divorcing made me cry. Like, I knew the entire time it was an eclipsal hallucination, but still. Don't you love how Rick is like, Granny needs her help, and then just hangs up and with no other explanation, like Pat and Cord are probably like, the fuck? Also, does Pat have a flip phone? Because LMAO. The staff chose Courtney. Courtney chose Yolanda. Rick's dad chose him, but no one chose Yoon. That line cut me to, not to mention the not-so-subtle racist undertones of the entire exchange with the stealing, athletic, not being the same race as the original Dr. Midnight, etc. Angelica did a great job with the acting in those scenes. I was so scared that Grundy actually killed a girl, but when it turned out to be another eclipse hallucination, which means that he's able to whammy two people who aren't even anywhere near each other and at the same time. Yikes. Loved hearing Best Mom's story about moving to Blue Valley and being the only Black doctor and having to work harder to prove herself. Rick going into jail and Grundy watching it happen was so sad and makes me nervous for what's going to happen next. Also, did Grundy say the word friend or was I hearing things? He did. He did. He said it was his friend.
Emo!
And then finally she hopes that Barbara and Mike will be okay with her. house getting iced over. Do we think this is Eclipso or is it Icicle Junior, aka Cameron, who has realized Mike? I don't think Cameron doesn't seem like he's that smart. So I don't think that he's realized that Mike has anything to do with his dad's death. So my money is on Eclipso. But that's all the feedback for Stargirl.
Beautiful. Now, do we have any predictions? Prediction.
Well, I think the iced house is Eclipso for sure. Because it's like Mike and Barbara, both of them have connections to Icicle, you know, because Barbara almost had that thing with him and then Mike, you know, ran him over. So I think that's the perfect line of attack for Eclipso.
Yeah, this is, well, it's not a prediction, but I do think they're holding off on giving us some Pat goodness because they're waiting for the big secret flashback episode.
To figure out why he's not so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then that could also be why when Starman comes back. I feel like, you know, the fact that we know Starman is alive and Eclipso hasn't necessarily hit at Courtney yet, we might see Starman again and might not know if it's a hallucination or not when he comes back and, like, tells Courtney, you need to give me my stat back and blah, blah, blah. Because taking away Cosmo from her would be, like, her worst fear. So I feel like that's when we're going to get to see him again.
Makes sense.
Oh, and then she could be like, you're Eclipso, you're not real. And then he actually is real.
That would actually be hilarious. I like that one. All right. So, shall we move on to Jackpot prediction? I mean, not predictions. Supergirl?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. The episode is called The Gauntlet. Supergirl and the Super Friends race Nixley for control of a magical totem that controls courage. Supergirl and Nixley battle and each get a piece of the totem, learning that the first person to pass the gauntlet of courage will gain control of the entire thing. Meanwhile, Lena is struggling to make sense of her newfound gift. And since the recap didn't really recap anything, Nixley is the one that passes the gauntlet, the test, not by killing her brother, as she thought was, first she thought she had to kill her dad. And then she was like, oh my God, what if I have to kill my brother? But no, it turns out you don't have to kill people. You just be honest and open and vulnerable about your feelings. And so she told her brother how sad she felt that he betrayed her. And that was courage. So trick question, I guess. Meanwhile, Supergirl was taken back to the pilot where she relived the plane crash that, you know, could have maybe killed Alex if Supergirl had not intervened. And then the time that she, like, skipped over, like, right after that, she, like, didn't stop and help someone because she heard them because she was afraid of being found out. And so the time she stopped to help them, but that was not courage. And I hope I did not forget what courage was. She just hasn't passed it, right? She just didn't pass
it. Yeah.
And then Lena was like, but I could maybe help you pass it with my magic. And then Supergirl's like, oh my God, you have magic? What? That's so weird. Also, Kelly was like, thank you for the space, Alex. I will use the space to not be in the episode. And Alex is like, I will go with you to not be in the episode. And Kelly was like, no, you need to be in the episode. And then at the end of the episode, Kelly came to help, right? Guardian did come to help. And Alex was like, I didn't even call you back to the episode. And Kelly was like, I know, but I needed the money. So here I am for you. And there you go. That's all I remember. That whole story. Oh, Rainey also hilariously took over, like Vita. The
Vita took over.
The Kryptonian witch. Took over Brainy to explain things, allowing Desi Rath to do another impersonation. And Lena to witness, to stare another witch in the face. Okay, so.
What, be like, maybe they're not so bad.
Exactly. Maybe magic isn't a four-letter
I
word.
I feel like after meeting Vita, I like never want to touch
magic. Exactly. Never mind, no magic. Okay, so the teleplay was, the story was by Dana Horgan. The teleplay was by Jay Farber and Brooke Pohl. And it was directed by Tanya McKiernan. So now, speak your joy.
I think this was like a really interesting episode. It allowed people to go in directions that they don't normally go in with their characters, which is always kind of fun to see. I like that opening up, you know, Alex is still like horrified that Kelly's going to leave her at some point. So she's just like going above and beyond to give Kelly, like, do you need space? Do you want me to come with you? Do you want me to not come with you? What do you want me to do? You don't have to talk. If you don't want to talk, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so I like that Kelly was just kind of like gently telling her that, you know, we're not breaking up. I still love you. I want to build my life and where my future goes, you are in it. So I like that, you know, because I think that happened at the end, but I like, you know, that Alex is still trying to do whatever she can to be the best support that she can be to Kelly. And then at the end, you know, Kelly has that space off screen to do her thing, but that, you know, she's still, I really liked when she came back to protect Alex when Alex was like dealing with like the lightning storm, because I thought that was like a great, you know, superhero girlfriends fighting together kind of moment. And it kind of symbolizes the way that they work together and what Kelly was saying about how, you know, when I talk about being guardian or moving forward in my life and what that means to me, you are there and I want to build something together with you. So I like how they are building up that relationship towards potentially a wedding and a child. So that bodes very good things. I like the gauntlet, the actual test of, you know, going to a back to a place in time. Season one for Kara, which was like really kind of cool, especially since this is the final season, going back to the beginning. It's always fun. And then I liked getting the backstory on Nixley, because we've heard about this betrayal from Nixley, we've heard it from Mixie and all these other different angles. So it's really interesting to see it play out in Nixley's memory. I also think like the totem has really weird standards of what courage is. So like them, you know, trying to do the right thing. And also that's like a race between like who's going to pass the test first. I liked the Vita possessing Brainy. It was high key hilarious. Like, you know, Jesse Rapp just did like an amazing job. And it was just so funny because like Vita was just like, so it's like, are these nipples? Like, where are these? And the way that he just like delivered everything was great. And I also thought it was interesting how courage made people act out in different ways, like how it made John more open to sharing all of his emotions all the time. It was, you know, also was kind of like a funny thing. And the fact that Brainy's courage made him more comfortable with like guesstimating and how he's like, oh my God, am I guesstimating? So those are all kind of like really, really fun kind of moments. Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I think the fact that Nixley and Kara kind of connect now is an interesting kind of take, because she's definitely still the big bad, but there's still, even with the flashback that we had of her, we see that there are reasons to why, and like compelling reasons to why she is the way she is. And now that they're connected, I do feel like this is someone that Kara can maybe went over with the power of love eventually, if she can stay connected to Nixley. So I think that's like a good way to kind of build up that hero big bad type situation. And I like the Lena Carr talk at the end. I feel like it's, you know, really good. It shows that their friendship is back in a good place and they're both supportive of each other and talking to each other and leaning on each other. So all of that was pretty good.
Yes, we love to see supportive friends. And, you know, it was interesting because it's like Lena is like, I'm not ready to accept the fact that I'm a witch. And then Kara's like, let's go get advice from the witches of Krypton. She's like, you know, maybe this is not so bad after all. So I like the use of the Kryptonian witch was a nice segue into Lena admitting to Kara that she, too, is a witch and that her mother was a witch. And Kara also, you know, believing in her and accepting her and even like willing to not push her to talk about it because Lena kept saying she's not really ready to yet. Mm-hmm. So that was a really nice moment for them. And just like you said, with the whole courage thing, I thought it was like Jean just being like, I'm so proud of you. Look at what he did over there. Like, that was amazing. And then even like Alex's, you know, changes it was really, really funny scene. And I think I wish we had gotten just a little bit more of it because she's like, Kara's like, are you talking trying to talk to a dragon, like talk it down. It's like, this is not going to work. But that, all of that was hilarious. At first I was, because I watched it with the audio being way off. So I was like, what the fuck is happening? But it was a really cute scene. And I think it got to give everybody in the cast kind of like something different to do mm-hmm. with their characters, which was really nice. And I love it when Brainy always gets something different to do with this character too.
I forgot. Yes. William was so brave. I know you will talk about him, but he was in my joys.
Yes, William got to kind of push through his own issues with the fact that he was shot. PTSD. I know, because they never focus on William. So I was like, oh my God, are we getting a William story here? Like, that's really nice. And he had like the gumption to push past that. And he's like, I'm going to insert myself with the super friends and embed myself into their little community group. And he was like, well, oh, okay. Because I feel like we predicted this was the next logical step for him to do. Like, this is how he would find out, you know, Kara was Supergirl. So I think that was like a nice, you know, story for him, even though it was very brief to the point where like, they mentioned it at first. I was like, are those flashbacks? And then they brought it back at the very end. So it's nice that they're actually giving him something to do. And just like getting more of Nixley's story, like you see how she felt in her betrayal and the fact that, you know, she's just so murdery all the time, to see her actually express her emotions was something interesting. And I feel like with most villains, it's because they're not able to express their emotions that they're become so villainous sometimes. So the fact that she got to do that and like basically told off her brother for betraying her and breaking her heart was really like a great moment. I think sometimes the writing isn't always there, but like the actress is really doing a great job playing this character. And also the fact that we got the nice little scenes between Alex and Kelly, who are just super cute. And, you know, it was a really nice touch that Alex is giving her space, but at the same time, Kelly wants to reassure her that it's not like, you know, I'm ditching you now. And also just having them be setting them up to be like a nice crime fighting duo, like they're partners in the field and at mm-hmm. home, which is really, really nice. And I think that the show has been doing that really well so far this season, especially in the back half where Kelly has been actually getting a bit more to do than the first half of the season. Yeah, I think that is all my joys.
Overall, I did think it was a fun episode. I don't think it was like a particularly like I will remember this forever kind of episode, yeah. But it was fun for what it was, which was setting up this like Easter egg hunt or, you know, MacGuffin, if you will, of the totems. I did love the Alex and Kelly moments, even though I was joking about Kelly just going to the off-screen land. But I do love that Kelly is like Alex is trying to give Kelly space and also worried about it, right? Like, right. Is this too much space? Is not enough space? Like, what is the right amount that you want? And so she's trying to give space, but also support at the same time. Very sweet. And that Kelly is also like verbally grateful for it, and also getting to do, even though it is off-screen, her own like social work, continue that storyline with Orlando that I assume we're going to see again, right? Assume mm-hmm. it's going to come back around. And of course, I love that she just came back to stand by our woman at the end, right? She can't have it all. She can do both. So that is great for her. Also, I did like, first off, that the courage totem is like David and Goliath, like the slingshot that killed Goliath, right? It's like, that is courage. So you understand. The totem understands what courage is. Does the gauntlet understand? I don't know. We'll see. But I did like that. And then also that it took us back to the pilot, because like you guys said, it's a perfect full circle moment for Kara, or it will be a perfect full circle moment when we finally understand what would have been courageous of Kara to do that was not what she did. Because I don't know, but I did like that it really does feel, you know, like the season was made with the fact that it is final in mind. So I'm glad that they're working towards sort of like closing the chapter, like looking back on how far we've come, etc. Also loved that Nixley had to be vulnerable to pass her test. Allows us more access into who she is and why she is the way she is, and mm-hmm. also might be one way to help her, you know, turn back, I guess, before she destroys everything. I don't know, maybe, we'll see. Also, everything, like, all of the effects of the enhanced courage were just hilarious. First, you know, this isn't an effect, but Vita, brainy as Vita, Vita's brainy, whatever you want to say. Jesse Rath impersonating Vita was amazing. He's so funny. I loved that.
I thought like she wasn't as strange until he took it over, and then she became
exactly.
Like,
really exactly. Took it up to 11. Also, like him having the courage to guesstimate. That was so funny. I'm like, so courage is a bad thing, is what you're telling me? But yeah, so for him being like, you know what? I'm no longer afraid of being wrong. I'll just be wrong now. And John, compliment John, who's like, let me stop the action to tell you how great you're doing right now. And everything that, and the fact that he was able to turn everything into a compliment, right? Was so funny. And yes, even like adrenaline junkie Alex, I feel like we've seen her in this mode so often that like that's not funny when it's serious, but in this case it was funny. So probably because like I feel like stakes did not actually feel that high. Also lizards turning into dragons. Who wouldn't be? And then back into lizards. Like, why? Who? That was so cute. The lizard was so adorable. Also, the Lena and Kara scene was very nice. It's nice to see Lena able to admit this to Kara, like, even though she's like that she's afraid of it. And Kara, you know, being respectful, but also like supportive. And yay, William, having a storyline. I root for you, William. I support you. Also, there's like that little moment of like Nia and William, like besties. So there you go. We love that. That's all I got. What did not spark joy?
You know, like the courage, the way that they were displaying courage is funny. I'm just not sure, you know, is it really courage to give someone a compliment? I don't know. And I also, like, you know, like I said, like their so-called lessons and like Nixley having the courage to open up to her brother and be vulnerable. Sure, I get that. But Kara, like, I don't know what the point was that she should not have saved Alex. Like, how is that courage? It's either save the plane with Alex in it or let everybody else on the plane die because she didn't have the courage to do anything as Supergirl. And I feel like this totem round was not just like winnable kind of situation at all for Kara, because like even if Alex wasn't on the plane, I guess that would be the thing. Like, if Alex wasn't on the plane and Kara is still in the same situation, we go back to season one, would she still save the plane, even though that means she might be outed as Supergirl? Maybe. You can make a thing out of that. But I don't see how letting Alex die proves that Kara has courage or any kind of thing. So, I don't know. I don't even know how she could even, like, if it's just, like, a vulnerable thing where she just, like, talks to Alex about not having her, I still don't see... What was she going to do? Like, I see your plane's going down, Alex. I thought I'd take this time to talk to you and tell you goodbye. Like, I don't I don't know what Kara was supposed to do there. I feel frustrated for her. So that was kind of odd. You know, the whole thing about Kelly being off screen, it's not, and it's also Nia. Like, I feel like they're the most expendable to the writers when it comes to, you know, picking and choosing which parts of the team they want to show and which they don't. Like, Nia's courage was having the courage to go to sleep and to sleep deeper and longer off screen somewhere. And then we don't even see, like, you know, what she learns from her deep slumber. I guess we might see it next week, but, you know, she's off screen forever. And then you have Kelly that is going to do these things with Guardian, but they're off screen. But then we have Dr. Lar, who is... I don't know. I saw like the actress that played her on Twitter say something. I don't know if she's like somebody's friend or like connected. She's
Jesse Rath's girlfriend, I think.
Okay, well then that makes sense why she had so much of a story like in the episode. But I was just like, why are you spending so much time following her around? And you know, is lightning storm thingy gonna be a thing later on? Like, I don't know why you're spending so much time on this instead of with, I'm sure, like, you know, Orlando could have been at the museum. He could have gotten the courage to do something like reckless. I don't know, to tie in Kelly more to the episode. So it's kind of like, you know, I would rather take out Dr. Lar and put back in Kelly at some points. And then also just a continuation of last week. I don't know why we need Witch Lena. Surprise, surprise, Earth witches can control fifth dimensional imp magic somehow. You know, it just, you know, goes back to Tati's point yesterday. There's just this big, like, MacGuffin that Lena will magically save the day because magic. So, you know, yay, but yeah. And then, you know, finally the assassination of Andrea continues. I don't know why she's being such a bitch to William, or just in general. Like, I just, who hurt you, Andrea?
Like, Chris, like, you need to have a sixth sense about what the Super Friends will do. It's like, how? Yeah, she's being, it's all nonsense, but yeah, I agree with most of your dislikes, honestly, because like, because as soon as Kelly was saying, she was telling Alex, she's like, yeah, you know, I still have something to do at work. Orlando has a really great idea. And then I waited. I was like, what is it?
Exactly.
What's the idea?
We're gonna find out.
But we did not get any of that. And I feel like it sort of lost the momentum that was building from last episode and completely took a left turn into, you know, back to Nixley, back to a regularly scheduled programming or whatever. So it didn't, they could have done more with that. And I didn't understand Dr. Lara either. I was like, who is this lady? Do I need to care about her? Like, she's here and she has this competitive situation with her colleague and she lost money. But I'm like, how does this tie into that? And it's like a random character coming in, and the show already has so many characters to balance, and I felt like that didn't need to be in there at all. So that was a little bit frustrating. And then like with Kara's courage thing, whatever it was called that she was holding, it was really odd because I feel like we got a lot more emotional story on Nixley's side. And we could have had that with Kara, but I feel like once again, the writers are underwriting her character on her own show, because it's like, I don't understand what she was supposed to get out of that whole plane thing. Rather, I would have learned from her how she maybe felt about possibly losing somebody she loves, or maybe something that happened to her in the past that was traumatic for her and she had to tell off somebody in the past for whatever reason. I just don't feel like they let Kara be angry or have any emotion besides like wanting to help people. And I don't think that that's, it's not bad to want to help people, but at the same time, Nixley is like expressing the courage to express her emotions, and Kara is not getting any of that. It's all about rescuing someone physically, and I feel like that really takes away from the connection between her and Nixley. And right now it feels like Nixley has a much stronger story arc. So that was irritating. And then I also don't like Lena's magic storyline. I don't understand. Like, I'm glad.
It's, you know, just like necessary.
Yeah, it's just, I'm like, okay, I guess we're just going to continue down this road. And I don't think that, like, right now it hasn't greatly benefited her character. And it doesn't necessarily, to me anyway, like, add anything that we don't already know about her. Like, I know maybe like her struggle is going to be, well, I'm a science person and magic is just beyond me, but I don't really buy it yet. So I feel like they have to either work harder, or they should have just dropped it. And yeah, like you said, you know, Kelly not being in the episode enough, like, we could have picked up on that storyline. And then Nia not having, like, she had such a strong a few episodes ago, and I feel like we could have gotten even more about how she's still feeling about her sister. Like, has she reconnected with her sister? Something that we could see where we get a progression of what happened with her before, you know, because is she just not going to talk to her forever? Like, how is she going to resolve that communication problem and the feelings that she has towards her? So, you know, a lot of missed opportunities on the emotional front.
I definitely agree with that. It definitely felt kind of like a paint by numbers type of episode. Like, now we're going to go on this mission, and then we're going to go on that mission until we reach the end, which is somewhat disappointing for the final season of a beloved superhero show. And you made an excellent point with Kara's like emotional arc and how it just doesn't feel present. Like, the show has never felt less about Kara. It felt more about Kara in the first half when she was trapped in the Phantom Zone than it does now that she's out. So that is a little bit unfortunate. And they did lose momentum with several storylines, especially Nia's and Kelly's, most of all, because we literally were just there. And then we cut away from it. I also definitely, I don't know who that woman was. I forgot, I forgot she existed after the episode ended. I don't remember what she did. Other than be very mad about something. I can't tell you. I can't tell you. She created Dr. something. Lar,
the lightning thingy.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, I think she like
she wanted to control lightning.
She lost funding lightning. Or something. Yeah.
Right. Her partner was like, "This is too dangerous. I'm not gonna let you do it." And she's like, "I want to do it."
She had the courage. See, and where to get her? Where to get her? But anyway, I don't know why she's there. I'm sure all will be revealed, but it was unnecessary.
We revealed it. She was Jesse Raff's girlfriend. That's why she needed a check.
Well,
the pandemic was hard, and she needed a check.
Well, that was very kind of them, but if they could have reduced it down to like one line with the same check, that would have been nice. Oh, well. Yeah, I definitely feel like they just don't know what to do with Andrea. Like, they were like, we want to keep Andrea, and then they just forgot. And now they're just like, well, let's just do something. Same with William. Like, we want to keep William. Oh, people hate him. Okay, well, we've forgotten. But at least they've maintained William's integrity, which they have not done.
I feel like they're going to ramp up on William, though. Like, he's going to get back in the game.
Yes, this episode Willie definitely style. Felt like they've actually done arc for him, finally. But for Andrea, I don't know what the hell they're going for. I don't even know, like, she doesn't really even have, like, she's not making good points. She doesn't know how to run her business, so maybe
yeah, you can like sense the desperation. I'm like, this is not how you run a newsroom.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I would have much rather have seen Kelly fighting the good fight than, you know, Jesse Rath's girlfriend. Also, yeah, I just don't like MacGuffins in general, but I especially did not understand how courage connected to anything. I understood Nixley's, like y'all already said. And I thought it was a funny perversion of courage, you know, the way that all those things happened and now no one can function properly because of courage, even though like some of them were a bit of a stretch, but it was funny. I have no idea what we're going with Kara, though.
I feel like they made courage and they switched it with confidence. I was like, because that it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Whatever. Right. That's true. Confidence. Yeah. There you go.
Confidence makes a lot more sense, especially with Brainy and his like guesstimating. He's like, yeah, that's right. That's yeah, exactly. Confidence. That's not like, courage.
Just bravado, just whatever, you know. But anyway, so yeah, I definitely was like, oh, I don't really know what's going on, but okay. So, did we get any feedback?
Of course we did. First Yay! Up is Shang. He says he sent us an updated version because he spent all night thinking about it. He says, "Hey there, lovely ladies. Supergirl feedback. Hand over the totem." No. He's like, you love
that. I forgot that was so funny. They really thought that they were just gonna ask Nixley back for it anyway.
Yeah, and she's like, no, Nixley deserves all the rights. I'm glad we are seeing more of her backstory because it did get me more interested in the totem storyline. Also, which Supergirl writer went to the Legends writing room and stole some of their crack? The comedic moments hit in this awkward cringe way that I liked. What are these, his nipples? Why is Jesse so funny? Lena throughout this episode, shut up about magic. Lena's witch storyline confuses the fuck out of me, so correct me if I'm wrong. All that chit-chat was just to say that she's immune to fifth-dimensional magic, so she's practically Kara's safety net? Yes, basically that's what's going on here. Can Nixie sense she has magic too, and hence get all chummy with Lex because he's using him to counter Lena? Interesting theory, Sean. Welcome to my Supercore TED Talk. Lena, my mother's a witch and so am I. Kara, honestly, not the worst thing I've learned about your family. Honestly, the writers will really be pulling the shit out of me. Again, clown costume is out. I really got super core hug in the first few minutes. Want to come? Sure, half portal will travel. It's flirting, Your Honor. Kara, do you really not believe in magic? And Lena's, I believe in you. Okay, now kiss. Kara with her glasses and Lena talking on the couch while I'm Mr. Couch scene so much. Kara's flustered look out of her head. Look of her head down, eyes trailing downwards and grinning every time Lena praises her. Classic courtship signals. MILF Nixie's being like, why is she so hopeful and happy? She's having dinner with her wife, that's why. Literally, the writers could have written a scene of super friends having a debrief and laughing together, and then Nixie's feeling angry because she couldn't understand why Kara's so happy. What was the reason? It was just Kara and Lena, if not in-game. Okay, Xiang. There is no theory about Kara losing her powers. I have this irrational fear. Don't worry, ladies. Okay. There are two ways I thought about courage. One, Kara's courage is always putting others before herself, and that's why she doesn't have the courage to do is let the person she loves die. So for her to pass the test, she would have needed to let Alex die and deal with that pain. Again, I don't get it, but okay, I get where you're going.
I'm like, I get it.
I don't see why she would ever like voluntarily do that.
Like, I get it intellectually, but I don't get it. Like, why anyone would need to do that?
Or two, Kara's fear of being seen, that she should have stayed by the plane and not flown off and revealed herself as Kryptonian that night. Though I felt using the pilot scene was wrong, because why would you frame that as lacking courage? Why frame it as a failure? Because even though it was starting point of her adding another identity to hide herself, there is also much courage about making that choice in the first place. To me, I think they could have chosen a moment where Kara should have told Leah the truth. At first, I thought perhaps the almost reveal in Kanzia with the plane scene, but it took more cards for Kara to put her glasses back on because Lena needed to see Kara Danvers at that moment. Then I was thinking maybe when Mercy attacked Luther Corp during their first Kryptonian rift with the rain on Lulu, she would have been vulnerable then and emotions would have hit, but perhaps in that fifth dimension magic way, it knew Kara needed to learn a lesson. Interesting. And I was thinking that, you know, you could have done it with the Supergirl reveal to Lena, but I feel like she already passed that test in a way, since they kind of cleared their rift and got back together. So I guess that's why that wasn't chosen. But I feel like that would have been like a better emotional beat rather than telling her to kill her sister. Finally, Sean says, and with the whole gauntlet reveal, my finale prediction is that Kara will reveal her identity to the people of Earth, the ultimate act of trust with humans. And I think it would be a nice full circle moment if she reveals it with her opening voiceover. When I was a child, my planet Krypton, over her newer one, my name is Kara Zor-El, and I'm a refugee on this planet, because I think that Kara failing this test would weigh on her. And for the subsequent totems, Kara would be tested on her trauma of loss and abandonment, perhaps having even more throwbacks to when Kara loses / almost loses someone. Interesting. P.S. I really want to start Stargirl Season 2 and give feedback, but I'm so busy and always skip to the Supergirl section to avoid Stargirl spoilers. I sure hope my precious Yolanda girly is doing fine.
Oh, well, it's very wise of you to skip.
Yeah.
We look forward to the time that you have time and can give us feedback.
Next up is Suara. Suara says, hello, ladies. This is a really good episode of Supergirl. I think the Totem of Courage was used quite well here, and it was very interesting to get more insight into Nixley's past. I love that her passing the test was letting herself be vulnerable about being betrayed by her brother. Oftentimes, it can be the most courageous thing to do. I find it very interesting that Kara didn't pass her test, and I hope we find out the reason for that in a future episode, and what exactly she should have done that night to be more courageous. It might be letting the world know that her as Kara Danvers and not just Supergirl, i.e. being courageous enough to let the world know who she is, but we shall see. Even though Lena as a witch plotline was contrived to be of service to the plot, as y'all previously predicted, I think it was done quite well here. Katie did a great performance with it, and I loved her telling Kara at the end. Kara choosing to still be connected to Nixley was also very intriguing and should make for some great dynamics in the next episode. Side note, that was interesting.
Yeah, Kara choosing to still be connected to Nixley. That was a good choice.
Side note, but Kara and Lena appearing after Alex and Kelly mean that they're going to be girlfriends as well. Supercore confirmed. Kidding, although, of course, I love that. I love the Kelly and Alex moments and them reaffirming their commitment to each other, as well as William reckoning with his PTSD from being shot and Nia helping him through that. Also, Brainy and John were really great and comedic in this episode. Basically, everyone's great except Andrea, who continues to absolutely suck. And then finally, we have Sonia, who says, this episode wasn't quite as good as last week's episode, but it was still pretty interesting. Nice to see how an abundance of courage affected each person differently. Before I fully get into my feedback, I wanted to give Jesse Roth kudos for the scene where he was possessed by the Kryptonian witch, because that was honestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Also, David Harewood's performance of John having the courage to express his feelings was also hilarious. I love how Lena thought she left all the witch stuff in Newfoundland, and then she goes to the fortress, and the first thing she sees is a Kryptonian witch, and she's probably like, God damn it, this again. This whole thing is really reminds me of the Paragon storyline from last crossover. They are really running out of storylines. I totally agree with that. I wish we could have seen Orlando's idea for the housing situation, how Guardian was going to help, but that's fine, I guess. Nice that Kelly was able to protect Alex, though, during the fight sequence at the end. Andrea being back to being a raging bitch, I see. Nothing has changed, and the nice Andrea we saw with Lena 2 episodes ago was an anomaly. I really like how Nia got the text about 911 at the museum, but she gave William a tip before she left, like they should always do that, not just because it's nice to William, but because it also prevents other news sites from stealing stories because two of the writers are too busy fighting crime to write about it. Love seeing both Kara and Nixley need to express their courage to be worthy of the totem, and I loved how Nixley had to be vulnerable, as there's so much courage in that. Is anyone else reminded of Harry Potter and how Harry would feel what Voldemort was feeling when Kara and Nixley were bonded?
Oh, that's a good point.
Then finally, yay for William working through his PTSD. Also, I can't wait to see what comes of William wanting to work undercover with the Super Friends. Glad that Lena told Kara about her magic. And she says, what do you think Kara's courage test was? And also, do you think we'll get to see the course of action she should have taken later in the season? I mean, it sounds like, you know, what we said, that she should have let Alex die, which does not make sense. So hopefully we are all wrong and it's something else. But that's all the feedback.
Do we have any predictions?
Mm-mm-mm.
What do we think the next, do we know what the next totem is going to be?
I thought we did. I don't know if it was in one of Shang's thingies.
What
I don't know.
Forgotten?
Forgotten.
What we've forgotten. Okay. So anyway.
I don't know that, do we think that Kara is going to win any of these? Or is this, is this
she
like...
She should win one of them.
She'll win like the second to last one.
But it's all like, basically what they're framing this is Nixley's journey to like redemption. So doesn't she need to like learn lessons in all of the little totems, and maybe she'll be less bad by the time she catches them all?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, that would make sense. And then Kara can like win one just to have the confrontation with her. And then
yeah,
Nixley can be like, okay, I'm better now. I don't need to attack this whole other random world that has nothing to do with me. Thanks. So fingers crossed. Okay, so Lady Redemption of the Week nominations.
Beth.
Beth, definitely.
Well, yeah. Beth. I will third Beth. Yes. Do we
There's
have
no
any...
competition this week, unfortunately.
Right, I say, do we have a runner-up from Supergirl?
Nixley for facing
for having right
she
literally
she
had,
was very you know mm-hmm. vulnerable
exactly she had the gumption to be vulnerable, and we love that for her, but Beth still takes the cake.
Yes,
thank you Beth, congratulations. You are our light in the dark. All right, come back next week, but also this week for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if you want to pay some monies to feed us so that we can feed you with our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thoughts.
Oh,
otherwise,
that reminds me. Mm-hmm. We did get, just so he knows that we know, Charming Paolo on Tumblr sent us some Agents of Feedback.
Agents of Feedback.
I like that.
Feedback. So we will definitely include you on our next episode.
Be there or be square. And then next week, come back for more Superstar. Mm-hmm. Superstar Girl. Okay. You can find us at DCTV Gumption on Twitter, ladieswgumption @gmail.com, and ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. Thank you all, and good night, morning, or afternoon.
Bye. Bye-bye.